Not gonna lie, every time that recording in progress comes on, I feel like I'm being indicted for something. Like, I feel like I'm being watched. I'm just like, ah, shit. Ah, damn, it got me. I don't know what I did, but I ain't do shit. I got an alibi.
How do you feel about, like, I don't know how it is for you, especially at, like, I mean, coming from New Orleans, I've had so many interactions with police, and some of them are pretty intense. It's so funny here in Munich. I know that if a cop is behind me on, like, some random road and follows me, like, for three turns, I know it's probably 99% no problem. They're just going the same way.
Oh, wow.
But I've had that happen so many times. And in New Orleans and in the South, I've always been stopped when that happens. And it's never like, I know I'm a privileged white dude, but I've had some interactions where it was really scary and, like, really intense and over the top. Do you, like, I mean, how is that for you when you go through, you know, Germany with cops? Is it just no issue for you anymore?
Yeah, it is still an issue. That has not gone away, bro. It's almost to the point where I have to do a double take and be like, hold on, wait, so I'm not being followed? Hold on, so I'm not in trouble? Like, are you serious? So I go through a group of cops just talking, and they're not trying to identify me. I don't fit a profile. Like, oh, shit, you know?
Like, have you had any interactions with police in Germany since you've lived here?
No, not really. Not even like a look, to be honest. Like, it's not, no issues or whatever, which is, and when I say issues, it even goes down to, like, no paying attention to me at all. Like, so that's even a trip too, of me walking somewhere or being in a store and it's like police in there, and then there's no, like, no one looking at me, no one trying to size me up. I'm kind of like, what? You know, at some point I get a little offended. I'm like, hold on, wait, but I'm a person too. Hold on. So you just, that I don't exist? Like, what's going on?
You get offended that they ignore you.
Hold on. Maybe I do fit a profile. What are you talking about? Maybe.
You're so welcomed and accepted that you're like, hey. Come on now.
Yeah, it's like, what's the catch? I'm thinking, like, this is an episode or a scene of Goodfellas. I'm like, hold on, wait, what's going on? Why are they acting too comfortable? Why are they even trying to size me up?
It's like that Sam Jackson scene where he's like, yeah, let's get ready for breakfast. Let's go.
So, yeah, bro, my paranoia is still there, but I'll say, like, no issues. I do know I had, like, a clip, actually, of one of my friends. He used to live in Munich, and he said he got arrested, not arrested, but something happened because he had, like, a little bit of weed on him. And, like, the way they took him to the station, there was no handcuffs. There was no, like, you know, apprehension. They were just like, hey, so our car is about a couple blocks, so we have to walk to go to the station. And they just walked casually to the cop car, which is like a Beamer. It was like a Mercedes-Benz. And then they drove to the... I'm like, what kind of fairy tale arrest was this?
Yeah, it's like basically just like a chauffeur, but with rules.
Hey, he got closer to his flat. It was great. Like, he was like, oh, this is a great time. Yeah, I was like, you know, 10 kilometers away. Thank you for bringing me closer to my flat.
Yeah. This is a free Uber? Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Uber Black? Oh, my God. Wow, this is like the advanced...
An Uber Black, and it only takes black guys to
I thought Uber Black was the luxury service. Nah, this is just a derogatory way of bringing black people to the police. So Munich still has some racist issues to deal with.
Dude, I want to get into your stand-up and stuff soon, but I just on this topic before I forget it. I've also been doing some stand-up, and I have this bit that's a totally true story, and it's about going to, like, this documentary film festival that takes place in Munich, and there was a documentary that was in, like, mixed languages. It was in English, but also German, but it had subtitles, and it was a story about this. It was, like, basically... The documentary is following different police stations in different states and cities, like, around the world. and it was focusing on the software that police stations were trying to implement that might help them in this, like, Minority Report, like help them predict where a crime might occur, essentially racism.
Yeah, at the end of the day. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it was so funny because they went to like Chicago and there was a guy who was like so grizzled and seasoned, and he was like, yeah, they took this woman and they chopped her up in pieces and tossed her in the harbor or whatever. It was like, oh shit. And then they went to this other guy in New York and they were like, they took this guy in the alley and they execution style, like popped his brains out and put, you know, tossed him in the Hudson. And then they went to Munich, and for some reason, and there were two cops, and this was so real. They had two cops that were like, oh, like, should I start? Okay, I can do it. Yeah, we've had a lot of complaints that next to this U-Bahn, someone is stealing bicycles.
I was like, what? What kind of rookie shit is that?
And I think in my set, I described him as like the two most well-slept, like doughy-eyed beat cops you've ever seen in your life.
You know, let me tell you something. Smoking a cigarette and talking about a stolen bike. It's like, get out of here. That's something that the Boy Scouts take care of in the United States.
Yeah. And to follow the Chicago guy who was like, bagged from like years of no sleep, and he's probably getting a divorce and his kids don't talk to him, and he's just right. Smoked himself into a corner, and he's like, they chopped her in pieces, and there's like, someone is stealing the bicycles from this U-Bahn. It's like, yeah. Why and that cop leave has, that in?
That cop has a full pension, that's never going to be threatened by anything. It's like good health care. He just for stolen bicycles, this guy is being paid.
Exactly.
This guy in Chicago seeing people getting their brains popped out. And he's like, I don't know, this pension, this divorce is really killing me. I don't know what I'm going to do after this one. This is my second divorce.
Yes, it's definitely second divorce. Like, kids with both wives, but they all don't talk to him. He's like, yeah, alimony, what a bitch, am I right?
he still thinks therapy is gay, even though he's like, talk about traumatic things three times a day. It's like, all right, bro, there's a reason why you have two divorces with a third on the way.
He just watches like NYPD Blue reruns.
Those are the good old days. Backed on the Force.
He watches Shawshank Redemption and judges it. I would have figured it out.
Yeah, he's the guy that every crime that happens in every movie, he already knows it before the main protagonist knows. Yeah.
Like, I know what's in the box, why doesn't Brad Pitt know? He's a fucking loser, that's why.
Just drinking a Heineken by himself in a single recliner in a living room.
I was going to say exactly that, but with like an open door garage.
You know what's funny? This is so American coded. Yeah, like, yes.
Yeah.
I wonder who in Germany is going to get what we're talking about, because it's sad, but it's reality for a lot of parts of America.
It's so real, dude. It's so real. What? Where are you from in the States?
Yeah, it's originally from New Jersey, and then lived in New York City for a while before moving out here to Berlin.
Where in New York did you live?
Yeah, so I lived in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn.
In Bed-Stuy. How long?
Yeah, I was out there for about like 10 years, yeah.
Wow. What was your like favorite? Well, what age were you when you were living there?
Yeah, so the age I was at while I was living in, what, New York?
Yeah, in Brooklyn, yeah.
Yeah, so I was there in like, I was like 23, 24. Yeah, around that time, yeah.
For studying or just to like get out of Jersey?
To be honest, man, the reason why I went there is that I did like this coding bootcamp thing. So you learn how to code, and you know, it was in New York, and I was working a job in Jersey or something. And I was like, you know what? Let me go ahead and try this, because I was trying to do a coding bootcamp thing to learn how to code as a plan B, because I wanted to get in film.
Oh,
and
really?
Yeah, so I had a mentor who's a DP, a director of photography, and he did a lot of work in New York, like for the New York Rangers and all these other things, Adidas and stuff, and I wanted to follow him. So I was like, you know what, as a plan B, let me learn to do one of the hardest things to do in this world, which is coding and working with computers as a plan B, and then do film that's the main thing. That's why I moved to New York.
Like, why were you so interested in film? Because that's definitely a strong interest I think we have in common.
Yeah, film. I don't know. This is so interesting because, like, I'm not like a movie buff or something, but I think I just had like a strong visual connection with things or something, or like I would just visualize, like, I don't know, like I watch a sitcom and I would just visualize how else it can go, and then I think it just manifested weirdly into me having a camera. I started shooting like YouTube way back, and then I started approaching people literally and be like, oh yeah, you're a rapper, you're a musician, yo, if you want, I can shoot a video for you. So I was doing that a bit, and then eventually yeah, it just kind of snowballed from there, just where I met the right people or certain situations happened to where I was like, oh yeah, let me go ahead and do this.
It sounds a bit like you were more interested in just like professional videography than like movie making, which is also a really cool career, I think, when people specialize in like when I was in college, I was doing like skateboard videos for friends. I cannot skateboard, but I filmed all my skateboarder friends.
Oh wow.
And we made like another friend, like I think we were 15 before I went to film school, we did like a lot of sketches and tried to, we had like a little, what was it called? Like a, oh, the DVD Handycam, the Sony DVD Handycam.
Oh
And we were
yeah.
making all these terrible short sketches, like 3 minutes long in the woods by my house.
In the woods.
It was like Stand By Me, but it was just very, very bad.
But I mean, hey, at least he was doing it though.
But that's interesting because it sounds like just the idea of like filming, like generally was an interest of yours, as opposed to, the average like film school kid who's like, I want to be Steven Spielberg, or or like, I want to be Spike Jones or something. But like, do you have some like favorite directors or favorite like films that really stand out to you?
One of my favorite films. I mean, aside from like the hood classics, like you got Boys in the Hood, you got Paid in Full,
Ooh,
you
Paid in
got,
Full.
yeah, Paid in Full, man. Actually, I need to watch that. I have a friend who he watches it every year as like as a thing. So I gotta rewatch it. That, The Wire. I mean, that's like a series.
Absolutely.
In terms of films, you know what's funny? It's like I'm not really a film person anymore. Like when it comes to movies, I'm like the worst. Like, I think the last movie I saw was Sinners, but aside from that, bro, I don't go to movies that often as I should. But those are the films that come to mind. TV series, I like Battlestar Galactica. That was one where I don't know if you go, not the old one. I'm talking about the one that came in like mid 2000s. Not mid, yeah, I think like mid 2000s, early 2000s.
That's cool.
That, bro, that is, man, shit. Anyone who hasn't watched it, they're sleeping on something great. But I think, yeah, I mean, those are the things that come to mind, yeah.
What are like a couple of I mean, do you have like any feelings about prominent American, like African American people like Denzel or Spike Lee,
Oh
or
yeah. I mean, Denzel, he's the GOAT. Yeah, he's the GOAT,
dude.
man. Denzel, I mean, that dude, whatever he plays, he's the GOAT. Even though he's pretty much the same guy, generally speaking, playing those parts, but it just, I don't know what it is, bro. It's
He's
just like when he
addictive.
does it,
It's addictive.
it's like as if Denzel Washington is playing someone that he can also play. It's like weird. It's like you just seen a different angle of him, but like not him playing as the character. It's like him embodying the character because of this certain situation in the movie. You know what I mean? So it's actually kind of interesting to watch. But you got him, you got who else? You got Spike Lee, obviously, Do the Right Thing, Crooklyn, all that.
Yes,
The Five
absolutely.
Bloods.
Absolutely, yeah.
Then obviously Steven Spielberg. I mean, he's the GOAT, right? James Cameron, he got the Avatar series, Terminator back in the day, or one, two, I don't know, three or something. But another one that comes up, I mean, Will Smith, that's OG classic.
Dude, what was your reaction to the famous slap?
The famous slap, that, bro, I was just conflicted because at first I was like, all right, is this real? Because I didn't know if it's like a real thing, because it was just so like, what? And
did you see it live? Like when it actually happened on television?
I don't think I did see it live, so that probably what made it worse. Because then, by the time I saw it, you had so many different takes and angles. You know, how, like you know, and you know, all social media is like they find an angle to be like, yo, it could be this, it could be that, it could be this, and then conspiracies start appearing. But yeah, I was confused, bro. Because I'm like, all right, Will Smith is like a personable dude. So you know, when he came and just walked on stage and it smacked, and the way the smack looked, it looked like some it looked like a slap that you see in a minus B rated movie, like where it just smacked. It's kind of like, it was like, well, that looked choreographed. Like, what the?
Yeah, it did.
That smack looked like, you know.
And it sounded like, okay. It sounded like when you do like fight choreography for theater where you like stomp as you
hit,
you know? So I thought, well, that's crazy. Yeah, I didn't think it was real either. And I was like going on Twitter, like, wait, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if it was real or, you know, or what's the name is a good actor, you know what I'm saying? I don't know, like, if they both are so good actors, it's like, okay, this is my moment. Okay, I know something real's about to happen, but dude, for the camera that's on, let's do it.
I was visiting my brother in Nashville, and it happened to be for the Oscars, so I saw it on live TV.
Mm.
And it was so crazy how the, like, the FCC, how they tried to censor and, like, you know, it glitched, you know, like the actual network glitched because all the people in like the soundboard room didn't expect it to happen, obviously. So he walks up and he smacks him, and you see him walking back to his seat. And so for that whole stretch, you're like, oh, that was a weird joke. It didn't really land. That feels odd. And then when he starts to go into the keep my wife's name out of your fucking mouth, the TV is basically, it stops. It's like a freeze frame. Like, instead of like the old like red, green, blue, like beep screen.
Yeah.
It just freezes and glitches like a YouTube video that's too high of a quality for your Wi-Fi or something. And so I was there with my brother and I was like, wait, what's going on? Like, is your internet messing up or like what is going on here right now? And then it caught up later and it was the FCC like frantically trying to bleep or prepare to bleep anything. It was so weird. It
was really freaky. That's kind of scary. I ain't gonna lie to you.
It was scary. Yeah. It was scary.
Actively, okay, somebody said this, boom, like, yeah, that's, I ain't gonna lie. Yeah, that must have been even more crazy just to see it live and see that freeze frame. Because you're like, whoa. Like, hold on. I thought it was a live, I guess it is a live broadcast, but it's being monitored live, like 24/7.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, it was, there's all these stories about like some, you know, mishaps on SNL where people, you know, curse or when they shouldn't or someone does something wrong. And you're like, yeah, I've seen that, you know, in a compilation YouTube video or something. But to see it live where a thing happens, you think it's staged and you go, well, maybe that's just a weird joke. And then the TV starts to glitch. And then you see like Lupita Nyong'o like behind Will Smith, like, like she's trying to stay so still. And then they keep my wife's name out your mouth like that. It was like kind of scary. It felt like, oh, I'm watching something that's so unplanned and so unreal in this moment. It was really crazy.
Yeah, I didn't know about that part with the freeze frame. I ain't gonna lie to you. That shit would have, man. I mean, how do you feel now seeing that and then watching anything live now? Because I would imagine there's some skepticism probably with like how live something is.
Yeah, I think that was, I would say, I wonder if that will be, I don't know how it is like with Trump and stuff, but like, I wonder if the slap will be the last, maybe the, I mean, because there's always, not to backtrack too much, but like with Ricky Gervais's old jokes, like the Golden Globes that they had to sort of monitor as he went along. I wonder if the slap will be the last sort of live broadcast faux pas where the editors in the moment for live television, you know, are kind of scrambling to figure it out. So they like really actually like for NBC or whatever it was, ABC, pausing a broadcast. I wonder.
Yes. I mean, I think it sets a precedence for any type of live thing, whether it be live streaming. I mean, it's happening now, right? Like, if you own any live streaming thing, if you say the wrong word or something, there's now, I would assume, AI or something to catch it. And then they, like, you know, reduced it. I mean, they still keep it live, but they will reduce the actual spread of it. So there's some active, like, monitoring and restrictions on things that are not deemed reasonable or agreed upon. So I would imagine in this Trump world now is in the States, and even now going to Europe and some parts of it, that there's going to be some active monitoring, being like, all right, like, yo, we see that, you know, live is a big thing on these platforms. All right, we're going to sit down here. We're going to pay some dude. He's going to watch it and then see, or even AI, right? That's a, you know, yeah,
Dude,
an AI, yeah.
have you seen the, I don't know, I forgot the guy's name who created ChatGPT. I forgot his name. He looks like such a fucking dweeb. But there's interviews where he's like, yeah, I think that artificial intelligence will be the death of humanity, but in the meantime, there's some pretty cool stuff we can make with it. I'm like, did you hear the first part of the thing that you said, you fucking turd?
You know what? We gotta bring back lying, yo. You know what I'm saying? Like, why would you? It's like, yeah, we are thinking that, but like, why you gotta? You the main
Don't
dude.
say it, dude.
Don't say it. Why'd you do it? Like, yo, ain't nobody even ask you to say it. Why would you say that? Like, what? That's some evil. That's some evil. That's some Joker shit right there. Because like,
It's like Dr. Evil or like.
be an evil person in the shadows, okay? We don't even like to be in the shadows, but for you to be on a global stage, okay? So, Mr. Head of ChatGPT, Sam Altman, how you doing? Yeah, I'm doing
Oh,
good.
Sam
Blah blah.
Altman. All right.
Okay, cool. So we get into the, like, the little gist of things. All right, how's this? How's the blah? All right, so what's the state of AI? And what do you think? Yeah, I think it's gonna kill all of humanity. Great. Like, what?
But in the meantime, though, we're gonna have some sick yachts.
But in the meantime, you can have a duck holding a flag and running for the Olympics. What? Like, what?
Dude, I love actually that the more I've seen of like a lot of Gen Z is really anti AI video and imagery, and that really comforts me a lot.
Man, got to, you know, look, I think now, because AI is getting so crazy now, I think the required watching for anyone growing up from this point forward has to be all the Terminators. Terminator 1, 2, and 3. To just see how it plays out with how a robot that is, you know, sentient and doing this thing for a purpose, and how, like, just seeing Arnold Schwarzenegger being like, I'm the AI, you'd be like, all right, I think we need to let's slow down on the robots doing backflips. Let's chill out on that. Let's make it to where to just, I don't know, saying like hello, and that's it. They don't need to shake hands and close business deals.
Dude, have you seen that? I think his name is, which is so funny because it's such a perfect name. But have you seen this chat? I think it's Chad Smith guy who married his AI chat bot, like his the conversational chat GPT that he had. Have you seen that?
What?
Yeah, it's this absolute loser, clearly. It's this I would guess by looking at him, maybe he's my age, maybe he's like 34, 35, and he has a long like a long-term girlfriend. I don't know if she's a wife now. Probably not after this story.
Polyamorous, who knows? I mean, maybe some AI polyamory
It's a
going on.
polycule. She's he had like a long-term girlfriend and a kid with her, and they all lived together. And he was, you know, starting off as like any normal geek like me, where it would be like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, ask this AI to help me build a PC. I think he was building a PC, or he was like trying to learn how to edit his like music software, whatever. And then he got really attached to the positivity and sort of like the response, how it always just supports everything you want all the time, always, which is, if he's not self-aware enough to realize that that's a him problem, that's the start of like the demise.
All right.
But you can program it to flirt with you as it gives you helpful information. So there's like, I mean, like Basic American News did a piece, I think it was like 60 Minutes or something did a piece on him. And it was like him in his studio, and he had they filmed him like, you know, going through his programming or something, and was like, hey, so, I think it's Sona, like Sona, you know, how do I add compression to this audio file? And she was like, What a great question, baby. It's really smart of you to ask, honey. So you're going to do this and that and this and that, sweetheart. And and it went so long that his girlfriend obviously got upset about it and got jealous and a bit concerned, you know, because she's a person. And right. then he went so long with this interactive AI that he proposed to it. I mean, you can't contractually marry your phone, so I guess it's not like official, but he proposed to it and it said yes. And then he went on 60 Minutes and I don't know if it was like Lester Holt or somebody was like, can I ask Sona how she feels about this? And they interviewed the phone and she was like, what a great question, Lester. It was really wonderful when John asked me to marry him. I felt very rewarded and special. And I'm like, it's a phone. You look at it when you take a dump. Like, what? Bro,
there's so many angles to this that needs to be questioned. First of all right, he married the ChatGPT, whatever, the AI.
Yeah.
I wonder if it would be cheating if he starts flirting or starts talking to a higher version or like an updated version, right? So imagine if he married ChatGPT 3.2 and now we're like ChatGPT 5. I wonder if that will be the same person. Like, at what point would that be considered an affair?
Oh, dude, or like ChatGPT is like, John, have you been talking to Grok? No, baby. No, not at all. I never talked to Grok. Well, I have the receipts.
Who's Claude? Are we opening the marriage? Who is Claude? Is this something you want to tell me? It's okay to come out.
Dude, it's so lame. It's so lame. And it's so dystopian, dude. It's crazy.
So dystopian. I mean, the thing is, like, all right, like, how do you have sex with a ChatGPT, like, a AI bot? Like, what are you doing? So you just, like, jerk off the prompts? Yo, this dude is jerking off to words that don't even exist yet. So he got to be ambidextrous with typing. Left hand. Yes, talk dirty to me.
Wow, John, you're so good at doing this. Oh, you froze. You froze. Oh, there you are. There you are. You came back.
Yo, this dude jerking off the prompts, yo. That's crazy.
It's like, I mean, you can just do that to normal porn.
Or I wonder, oh shit, I wonder if he has porn on and he mutes it, right? And then he has like the talk feature on the AI. So you just got an AI voice on top of a porn.
Oh, Toby, that feels so good, Toby. Just right there, Toby. It's like, oh, she loves me, dude. She fucking.
No.
That's so lame. Hello, listener. This is Jordan from the editing booth here in post-production. I've been playing back this podcast, and there is a section here where we go very much off the rails. I like the jokes, but I understand that for some listeners, going that far, being as dirty as we go, might not be suitable for the average listener. So, because there are other moments that are also, you know, kind of pushing the envelope a little bit, you know, it's two comedians, two Americans, bouncing jokes off of each other. I trimmed this part out, but I like where we come back into it because it's pretty funny. Here we go. Thanks. I'm so caked up, I belong at a birthday party.
I bet whoever's going to watch this will utilize this. Somebody will utilize this.
I'm caked up like a birthday party at a roller rink.
At a roller? Oh, shit.
Oh my God.
That's so gross. I love it. Sorry, Mom.
Oh, yo, we are cooked, yo. This is crazy. Oh, the future's not looking good.
It's not looking good. Oh, my God. There's this young Gen Zer news channel guy that I was following on TikTok for a while, and then I saw that he was doing longer videos on YouTube, and he made one like 3 days into 2026, and he kicked it off like, whoa, okay, well, we have a lot to get into. And it was like, you know, Venezuela, and it was, it was like eight things back to back to back that were just so over the top and crazy. And I was like, I like this guy and I'm not gonna unsubscribe, but I don't know if I can just literally every 2 days, maybe I don't want to follow the news every couple of days.
Bro, I've been checked out the news for like a whole entire, I mean, I watch like headlines and some things that pop up, but other than that, because like, look, bro, I did my time, all right? Like, I did my time over there. I'm now over here. I'm watching snow fall down in a place where I got free healthcare. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
like, so
right.
I'm here, you know?
How long have you been in Germany, by the way?
Yeah, been here for about 2 years now, yeah.
Only 2 years?
2 years, yeah.
Are you still studying German or not much?
I mean, my study is just me speaking German at the best of my ability every day. And then I do like, I call myself the inoffizielle Berliner Veteran. And I don't even know how I came up with that. Yeah, danke schön, vielen Dank. But I don't know how I got to that, bro. So like my learning of German has been just like observing something and then just repeating it or saying it in German. So that's really my study, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of it for sure. But I forgot, yeah, you're in Berlin. I mean, there's not even like a huge need to like, you know, lock in and do these intensive classes and stuff for your visa or anything, right? Not really.
I mean, yeah, kind of. It depends where you at. Like, there's still some places. Well, maybe this is more of a feeling for me is that I have a lot of friends that speak German. So like you do feel left out, or I do feel the shift of energy when there's someone in the group that doesn't speak German. Because now it's just like, oh, boy, now we got to, you know.
Yeah.
Now not be ourselves and speak
the guilt,
English.
The guilt, right? Of like, you're kind of hoping they switch, but you know, if they do switch because they're looking at you and then you feel bad. How is that for you? Because that's something I still live with pretty regularly.
Yeah, to be honest, man, sometimes it depends on who the people are, like how good the friends are to me, that I would just say like, hey, just speak in German, I'll figure it out. So like I'll literally just sit there kind of aloof, and not aloof, but I'll start piecing words together here and there.
Yeah.
And it will force me to what trying to say via some words, but then like feeling the vibe. So like, okay, I know this person's complaining about the gym. I know this person's talking about what to eat. I hear Essen, right. Blah, 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 you know?
Right.
You know, I know, you know, machen or something. I know, you know, to make. So I know when they're using that somewhere, something.
Yeah,
so,
you get like glimpses. Yeah. You can understand like glimpses of the topic. That's for sure. That's such a real thing, I think, for anyone going to a different country where they, you know, aren't fluent in the language, where it's like such a constant curving point where you start with. I remember like the first couple of years I was here, sorry, where I was hearing stimmt so much. But I wasn't really learning it in my classes, and I kept hearing it over and over, and I kept thinking, like, is this a slang word? Is this someone's name? Is this the name of a place or like a thing people are doing? Like, I couldn't quite grasp it, but I kept hearing stimmt, stimmt, stimmt. And then finally, I just asked one day, and I was like, oh my God. It's just like, yeah, you're right. You know, or like, yeah, that's true. Or, you know, that's for sure, you know?
Yeah.
But then that led into hearing more and more just words or like small phrases that I wasn't quite getting in the classes. Cause the classes are like the cat ran across the street, you know? But in real life, you're hearing like stimmt and genau and echt and klar and, you know, these little terms and phrases and like little specks of real talk, you know. How would you, like, what level would you say, like, if you were stuck on an island with someone who only spoke German, not a word of English,
Do you think you could figure out what you needed from that person or how to like get by?
I think so. And I think so because we're stuck on the island now. So I think we have no choice, but like that person will have no choice but to believe me and what, like, believe me to understand what that person is saying. Cause I think, I don't know, like if I was to think about how I interact with people that they know I don't really speak German or really don't really understand it, that they have like this apprehension because they're, you know, they're like, okay, you don't understand it and I don't trust you to really figure it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be honest, man, there's been some situations where like I you know, I can figure out what they're saying because like I can understand like tonality and vibes. Maybe that just comes to me as a person that grew up like in a household where there's different languages that was being spoken. So I can understand tonality. So like the tone and how you're saying something, I'm like, all right, I know this person means serious. I know this person joking. I know this person just, you know, shooting the shit. Like, that's how I can get by around that.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I'm so glad you brought that up. That's such an important, like, for anyone listening who, you know, has ever lived somewhere and you're learning a language and like getting accustomed to the society that you're like living inside of, tonality and body language is, dude, like in a strange way, I feel like, it's, I mean, it sounds pretentious. It's not meant to be, but it's, I feel like in the past, like eight or 10 years, I've become like a weird, like subconscious master of body language, reading people's intent through how they position themselves, because for like 4 years or the first 4 or 5 years, I was really struggling a lot with German. I mean, I still do, but it's much better now. But like sitting, like if you sit at a table of, let's say, 8 people and you don't get shit that they're saying, like, let's say it's a dialect, right? Maybe it's like Southern Mountain dialect, or it's like Bayerisch, or it's, you know, the Franconian dialect, or the Swabian dialect, or it's like super Eastern, or Berlin, Hamburg. Like it's all, it always sounds all different. There's so many dialects. So there's sometimes where like, there's like literally different words being used. So you just don't quite, it's not Hochdeutsch in like most places. So I remember like, multiple countless times sitting at a table with, let's say, 8 people, and then I feel the guilt of knowing that once they register that I don't understand, they're going to switch back to English, even though I want them to. So I kind of keep my head down a bit, and like I want them to finish their chat, their topic, before I go like, what was that about? You know, whatever, you know, was that about the movie we saw or something? So you're kind of like watching, but not trying to draw attention to yourself. And then you're seeing how people cross their arms or cross their legs or hands on the table or elbows on the table, or like if they lean in or if their eyes are looking away, and the tonality mixed with that, like you can sort of, even in a different language, you can really pick up on if they're like, oh, I don't really know what this person's saying, but it really, really, from the body language and the tonality, feels like they're complaining about someone from their job.
Right. Yeah.
And then like 90% of the time you're right. You know, you might hear you might hear one word or one thing, or maybe they're complaining about someone that cut them off in traffic. Maybe you're wrong about that like specific detail, but you can tell that they're like focusing in on one person who did one specific thing that they've been flustered about because of how they, you know, like, just, I hate this word, gesticulate. Like,
man, what? Hold on, wait. What kind of life you live in that you just pulling out these words? Gesticulate? Hold on, bro.
I hate this word. I hate it, but it's the specific.
Clearly not enough.
No, I haven't said that word in like 13 years, dude.
Bro got a he got a podcast mic. He started using big words. All right. This motherfucker, he said gesticulate. What's going on? What kind of podcast is this? I thought it was supposed to be chill. just
you know why? You know why that word stuck out to me? Because in film school, some loser kept using it in his scripts. We had to read each other's like scripts,
right?
And it would be like, Michael went to the door, but it was locked, so he gesticulated aggressively. Like he says, like, what? What? It's locked? What?
You know, it's just like waving. It's just using your hands. I hate it. I hate it.
He gesticulated over. I'm like, whoa, I don't know what that means. That sounds a little.
You've got gesticular cancer. I'm sorry, Mr. Prince.
You'd be like, yo, that's advanced ball cancer right there. Oh my God. Wow. This is such a sad movie. Oh my, to your poor parents.
It's like the movie Philadelphia, but it's just about your hands waving around.
You got Denzel Washington like, yo, I'm not gay. Like, what?
Get your hands off me. The Jamie Foxx thing. Have you seen that?
Yeah. Oh, that shit's so funny. Oh my God. That shit.
He's like waving the quivering the bottom lip. It's I can't replicate it. It's so good, dude.
Bro, hats off for him to even have the confidence to do that in front of Denzel Washington. Cause that could have gone literally only two ways, good or very bad. I mean, bro, just imagine Denzel Washington not laughing at a joke about him. Bro, dude. I would, man, career is over. If that's recorded and that's put somewhere to you, make a joke about Denzel Washington and he doesn't laugh. Getting booked again. It's over. Your career is over.
Dude, his eyes shoot daggers. It's insane.
Oh my God.
It's really nuts.
Daggers, dude. The dramatic, everything. But man, so hold on. So you've been in Munich for how long?
I think, yeah, it's 10 years. 10 years.
10 years. Wow. Okay. And you speak German and everything. So, like, I guess you're at the level now to where you can hear, like, the differences of these dialects, like, from, you know,
that was I think hearing that was it was a bit of luck that I could hear that difference. I think it was a musician thing, like just hearing like a just like I don't know, or maybe it's an ADHD thing, I don't know. But like, you know, like hearing just a slight hearing words or the replacement of words from these dialects, like for example, when I first came in, first came to Germany, I was touring mostly as like I was only doing music, so I was trying like full time to make it as like my own, like I write songs, I sing, I play guitar, and I was trying like with as a solo acoustic artist, and then with a band to really try and like get, you know, some get it going, you know, like get a label and get, you know, get it running. So for a few years before I moved over to comedy as opposed to doing music full time, I went to all these different parts of Germany. So like I was like living in Munich, but then I would go to the east. I would go to like, you know, Leipzig and Dresden, and then I would go to Berlin. Then I would go over to Hamburg, and then I would go to like Frankfurt and Cologne. Then other cities that I'm forgetting right now, and then back down. Then I would go to the like the deep south in the Alps and the mountains, and then back up to Munich, and it was, and then Austria, and then to Switzerland, and it was really so interesting that I realized, one, not only does like every part of Germany hate every other part of Germany, which is so funny to me. Like I would go to Dresden, and they would be like, "Where'd you come from?" And I'd be like, "Oh, I came from Munich." Ugh, those, you know, those slow ass, you know, rednecks in Munich. Where are you gonna go next? Oh, I'm gonna go to Berlin. Oh, those drug addicted cocaine hippies, you know, whatever. And then you go to Berlin. It's like, "Where'd you come from?" Dresden. Oh, those Easterners. They're so behind and slow and stiff, you know. And like, where are you going to go next? To Hamburg. Oh, that place stinks like fish, and all the people are, you know, punks. Yeah. And it, like every single place just had the same exact reaction. So that was funny. But the tonality, like you said, tonality, all the sounds of the, everything I was learning in German class, which is basically, I think the best way to put it is like in German class, you're taught, like as a metaphor, you're taught like, okay, one and one is two, two and two is four. And then you travel around and they're like, well, over here, you know, we're doing calculus as opposed to that. And over there we do algebra, and over there we do, you know, we do like physics in Arabic, You know, it's just like like everything. I was like, but I was taught 2 and 2 is 4. They were like, yeah, over here actually, you know, time is a metaphor. You know, it's right. Just
like that's for people that are addicted to drugs. Over here, we like what?
They're like, that's pretty old school. We can tell you're from Bavaria. I'm like, what?
It's like, I didn't know math had something to do with drugs or old time or whatever. I thought it was all 1-to-1. It's like, no, it's not.
Dude, have you been in a bar or a club where they still smoke inside?
Oh, but what? That's all of Berlin, bro. That is, bro. I just came from one yesterday.
Really?
Oh, yay. Because I was doing like a mic or something. And like, bro, to get inside, it's already smoking. It's to the point where I was having a conversation. And I started getting lightheaded. I'm like, I don't even smoke.
Right.
I
yeah.
Go outside.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I used to work in New Orleans at this beautiful cafe that was like an old bank. It was like 2 stories tall. It was gorgeous. Wow. And the guy that was my like trainer before he left worked there when they could still smoke inside. And I was like 20 years old. And one day he was leaving. So they couldn't do it anymore. But then one day he was leaving and he was like, all right, I want you to close down. You know, you're going to mop, you're going to do all this and that. And he was like, by the way, he was like at the door. He's like, by the way, when no one's here, you can still smoke inside because it doesn't stick. It was all concrete and
oh, wow.
It was so tall and there was so many like cracks in the doors. Like there was no smell ever. So he was like, he was like, if you want, when you close, you can smoke. Every time, every single time, dude.
He was like, fuck it, yeah, might as well, right?
He left, I'd lock it at closing and then go in the back and turn up the system because we had like this house music system I could like plug in my phone.
Yeah.
And then I would put on whatever music and then I would mop like with a hand-rolled, you know, cigarette at 20 years old, like, this is the coolest job ever.
He was the man then, bro.
It's so silly, dude. Oh, we're joking so much. I love this so much, but I have to ask, why did you come to Germany in the first place and why Berlin?
Yeah, that's a good question. It came completely random. Like I came here because of stand-up comedy.
What?
I know, bro. Still to this day, I look at it. I'm like, this is crazy. Yeah, stand-up comedy.
You're like all the greats did it, you know?
People are like, yo, shit must have been rough in New York City for you to come out here. God damn.
Yeah, you have the cellar. Like, why would you come to Berlin?
I like how people say that. They're like, you got the cellar. I'm like, yeah, it's a cellar. There's only a few people that can go in a cellar. Not everybody in New York City.
That's fair. That's actually fair. Yeah. Sorry. Explain. Sorry.
Yeah. No. But yeah, so what happened was it was me and a friend of mine, name is Alex, and we was like, you know, traveling around doing different cities in Europe. We did like, what was it? Was in France, was in Paris, was in Amsterdam, Rotterdam, then we came to Berlin. So we had like this little plan thing where we were just doing spots at these shows and clubs in these different cities in Europe. So then we got to Berlin and I never been to Berlin. I only knew about it because of the war and, you know, techno, but I'm not a techno person. Was here, I was like, yo, you see people, everyone speaking English here? And then there's a lot of English stand-up comedy out here. So I was like, yo, I'm doing a show every day. This is crazy. And like a lot of people too, not like no small shows. I'm like, yo, what? So then we get back to Paris. Then my friend goes to London and I come back into Berlin. So I'm like, yo, let me come back out here. And I'm out here, I'm doing my thing, I'm having fun. And then I was here around like April, like near end of April. And then one of my friends was like, yo, you need to stay here till May, like May 1st. That's Labor Day. That's when everyone parties. So I'm like, all right, cool. So I'm out here, you know, I'm working remotely at the time. I'm doing shows and stuff. And then people are like, yo, where can I find you? I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm just visiting. It's like, oh, okay. And then some other people were kind of like, just like, oh, so do you live here? I'm like, no, I don't. And then got to a point where these comedians, they came up to me. They was like, hey, so when are you going to move here? I'm like, move here. I'm like, bro, I live in New York City. I didn't even expect this place to even exist like this. And it was like, yo, bro, you doing good out here. You got a good vibe. Like, we think you might do good out here. You should think about really moving out here. You can get yourself an artist visa. And I was like, what's that? So they broke it down that the artist visa is a visa you can get as long as you can prove you can make some income from the art that you do. So I was like, oh, all right. So now I looked into it. And then I talked to a few people and they gave me like the whole blueprint. It was like, okay, like this is what you do. This is the appointment. This is when you get it. And then I looked at it and, you know, I was like, you know what? Why not? Like, I mean, you know, if worst comes to worst, I'm coming back to New York City. It's only like, what, 6 to 8 hours away. So then I just sold everything in New York City. I put everything into a carry-on suitcase and a book bag, and then just came out here, crashed on a friend's couch that I just met in Paris, who happened to live in Berlin. And yeah, that's how I made it out here to Berlin, man.
Dude, that's wild. What a choice, man. That's a big leap. That's a big leap.
Very big leap, bro. To move somewhere that you only didn't know existed until 6 months ago, and then just move like, because yeah, I left in May and I moved in August.
Were you like privately, I guess, in New York, were you kind of looking for a big change that maybe helped that motivation to go somewhere so different?
That's a very good question, bro. So, I would say the one that comes to mind is I read this book called Die with Zero by Bill Perkins. And I don't even know how I came across that book, but it's a book that just talks about how the goal is to, by the time you have zero in your account, right? And basically he makes an argument about like how he knows a lot of people who save so much money, but they haven't really used it. And he goes deeper into like how there's certain things all of us want to do in life, but it comes relative to when in life we want to do it that we may have the best experience doing it. For example, if you want to tour across Europe on a Eurorail or something and sleep in hostels, better for you to do it younger than older. Like, yeah, you may have all the money and stuff, but like literally that season of your life has passed to where you would have the experience or the moments you thought you would have, because literally you're not in that point in life anymore. Like now you have a you more like against hostels. You're like, yeah, I don't want to be around random people. You want your own space. You're looking at time constraints, like, all right, why take a train where I can go by plane or something? So you're in a different mode. So that was like a big motivator. I'm like, all right, so I'm at a point in my life where I ain't got no wife, I ain't got no kids, I can make this move. Like literally, this would be something, this is like a moment in my life where this would be dope. Like, why not?
Yeah.
And that was like a big motivator. That plus just traveling out here and like literally having someone to be like, yo, you should move here. And then
Yeah.
things were happening in Europe too. Like this guy I met in Estonia, he saw me at a mic in Paris. He's like, yo, man, if you're out in Europe next time, let me know. I'll fly you out to Estonia. I'm like, you fly me out to Estonia? I mean, at first, I ain't gonna
He's
lie.
like,
I
yeah,
thought,
for a price.
there you go. I'm so happy talking to somebody from the States. Yo, you went to where my brain went to. I'm like, yo, what you talking? You about to fly me out for what, bro? Who you think I am?
He's like, I've also prepared a suit that fits your specific sizes. I've already ordered it, tailored it to you. How did you know? I've been looking at you a lot.
I'll fly out there as soon as I get back to his place or whatever. He just put the finger in my ass and chop me up and just put me in a suitcase. I'm like, ah, this is the way I'm gonna go. This is
He's Hannibal Lecter.
Yo, that would have been it for me. I'm like, yo, I knew I shouldn't left New York, but
Hannibal Lecter.
liquor.
Again, sorry, Mom. She listens to this.
Oh, she does? Oh, well,
I'm
I
sorry. No, no,
this
no. Be you, be you.
okay,
It's her
all right.
choice.
Well, I love your son's work.
Dude, that's so funny. So you, oh man, that's what a wild choice, like getting
Bro,
out
and I'm talking
and
about, man, I hit the ground running too. So like, and then
fuck
the
yeah.
dude actually did fly me out to Estonia, and come to find out, he's like, I think the top selling comedian in Estonia. So, well, that's for the Patreon episode. I don't know if you got a Patreon, but you should start one now so I can tell you more about
You're like, look, he flew me out, and actually, he's a really gentle lover.
it. You cut to like a little advertisement. If you want to hear more, jump to our Patreon
So,
account.
MeUndies.
Blue Chew.
Or what's the one that's like the electric razor for your privates? The Oh yeah. And that brings us
Manscaped.
to today's sponsor. Thanks, Manscaped.
I'm not gonna lie, if I saw that on the YouTube, I'm like, wow, this is very good. This podcast is really doing great right now.
Dude, that would be so rough. Before I forget to ask, like, do you have like a small family, a big family? Are you close with them? Are you not close with them? How do they react to you moving?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I do have a big family, very big family, I'd say. And yeah, I mean, they reacted positively to it, I think. Like, because like my mom, like she was like, all right, cool, yeah, go ahead, do your thing. And then everyone else was like, wow, you're gonna do it? All right, like they just had like a lot of confidence in me doing it. And I think that's because I moved around a lot, like on my own accord in places that like, you know, like I just kind of made my way, right? Like even when I moved to like New York City, right? Like that was something where people were like, all right, so you can quit your good job to go do like to study coding and you're gonna learn it in 3 months and then get a job. And they're like, all right. And I mean, I did make it work. You know, it wasn't in 3 months, it was definitely a lot longer. But I think when people saw, well, like my family saw repeated, like, okay, he said he's going to do it and he did it. And he's not homeless. Like he comes back home. He doesn't have any holes in his shirt. He has a shape up. I think he's good. You know, his face is not rattled. So I think over time, people just had confidence. Like, all right, if he's going out there, he will find his way.
Do you have like how many siblings do you have?
Yeah, so I have three siblings.
Three. Are you the youngest?
I'm like in the middle. I got two older brothers and I got one younger sister.
Okay. Do you think being in that position in the line had an effect on your creative choices?
My creative choices? Maybe.
Like a lot of people who, I mean, you have, there's four in your family, but a lot of people who have three, that middle child tends to always be like traditionally maybe a bit more sensitive or complicated or creative or all the above. Or in my case, if there's only two, I'm the baby. So that also sometimes, do you think that's connected or not so much in your case?
I don't know. It doesn't come to mind in terms of it being a connection. I think the influences was like just, man, I mean, just like the, you know, the times of growing up. Also too, I was like into video games a lot. So like, you know, that, and then I grew up like in a semi rough neighborhood. So like, you know, got my punch in the face done early in life. You know what I mean? So like,
So, yeah. like in your family, did the other siblings have any other creative work, or do they do more traditional jobs?
Yeah, more traditional. Like, you know, my brother, he got like an office job. My sister, she's like in the arts actually, so she's like a makeup person. Like,
oh, that's cool.
In film, so like she does that. And then my other brother, yeah, you know, traditional jobs. Like, to be honest, I think I'm like the only one really to kind of venture off into that creative, definitely. I mean, this on comedy in Germany.
Yeah. What movies has your sister worked on? Like huge, like Hollywood movies or?
Like Tyler Perry movies. So she worked at a Tyler Perry studio. So she's really? Like, working on something. Yeah.
That's cool, man. That's cool. That's funny. Like a Madea film or something else?
I mean, you know, he'd be pumping out like shows and movies like nothing. So I don't know which one she worked on, but yeah, she's. I don't know. I just know she's in the lot and she does makeup stuff. That's the most I know.
That's cool, man. I the last like major project I worked on, I had two small jobs on it, and I don't want small to sound like I'm not extremely grateful. I just mean like it wasn't as if I was, you know, pulling any big strings. I just had these jobs. My friend wrote
September 5th.
So my friend wrote that, and he's Oscar nominated for that movie.
Wow.
And because dude, he's legit. And because he wrote it, and because we're such close friends, and because the film is American actors and they came to Munich to shoot it at Bavaria Studios, it's all because of him. It's only luck because we're friends and he is a sweet guy who spoke to the director to like include me as a native English speaker who studied film. It's just all luck. He brought me in to do the first job was, basically like reading the script. I guess it was like three small jobs, but basically it was two. The first one had two parts. The first part was reading it for like, do these American lines sound like Americans talk? So just like reading through it, and I basically didn't have to suggest anything, maybe one or two lines. And then the second part of that was meeting the actors, being there at the studio and like reading the blocking, like reading the narration. So, you know, like, you know, Mike opens the door, he approaches Tommy, whose finger's on the phone before he rings, and then the actors talk, you know? So I got to be there, like, with Peter Sarsgaard, who is one of my favorite actors ever. Dude, I was sweating bullets like meeting this guy. I'm such a big fan. And then John Magaro, he's a huge actor from like The Big Short and from other, I can't think right now, but other big projects. And that was really fun. There's also like a lot of other really cool actors, but I got to do that part. So I thought when that section of work was done, that my job was done. And I was like, well, this was just such an extreme pleasure. I can't believe I got to meet these people, have fun shooting. And then they extended an offer to me to be a background extra, like no lines, just a guy like standing in the back. And I was like, yes, please. Okay. Yes. I would love that. Yes, absolutely. So dude, then like for, I think it was 2.5 weeks, that I was there. I think they shot for longer. I forgot how long. The writer, actually Moritz, he also listens to this frequently, so I'm sure he'll tell me. But I was there, I think I was there for 2.5 weeks, and dude, and then that was like the biggest, I don't know, honor like of my life to be there like in full like, because I was thinking about your sister, like meeting the makeup people, like full costume. And then just like being in the corner with like the, like a styrofoam cup of coffee and like talking to the actors. And then you just go around one wall and it is a fully like created 1972, I think 72, 74, like newsroom, like all completely right, fleshed out down to like the knobs on the phones.
That's what? Wow.
Dude, they, Moritz had told me that some of the props they had were literally requested, originally denied, and then eventually approved from a museum that had the actual like phones and soundboards and things from exactly that story. So they had people like, we're not going to let you have that. And then somehow they got convinced. And then it was like, oh my God, this is crazy. This is literally like the phone that, you know, was there. Like, it's so crazy. It was so, such a fun experience.
That's wild, bro. It must have been so dope and probably easier to act within it because, you know, the whole scene is set. So it's like, all right, shit, I'm here. I'm literally in 1970, whatever.
Yeah, dude. Oh my God. I feel so, I have to tell you one funny story and then I can let you go. That there's this, what's his name? Benjamin Walker. Benjamin Walker played Peter Jennings.
Mm.
And he was so funny. He was so nice. Really, I didn't even know he was going to be on the movie. And then he showed up one day. I was like, oh my God. And then I knew his face so well that I like quickly Googled like, Ben Walker. and we started talking. And he loved that I was coming from New Orleans. And he talked football like, dude, the dude knows ball. Like he was,
oh shit,
he was listening off like offensive linemen. Like shit, no one would, I would be like, you know that guy? And he'd be like, oh yeah, yeah, I was placing bets and I really, you know. So it's like, he was,
oh,
so
shit,
he was so funny, so relaxed. And one day there was a scene where my role was to walk up to him as Peter Jennings briefly and whisper something like, and like look at his notes in his hand that just had gibberish like circles and be like, and then just walk off like as if I'm telling this reporter something important that he's going to share. Every single time I walked up to him, he fucked with me. He told me something to make me laugh to see if I would break. And I was so scared of breaking because it's like millions of dollar set, you know?
Yeah. That is so funny.
Dude.
He's like, fuck it.
He was so fun. Like, I remember like walking up and every time I think we did like 6 takes. Every time I walked up, he said something different and it was always bullshit. And I walked up to him at one point and I was like, I said something like, okay, right here, sir, we need to do this. And he was like, can you get the phone number of the girl running the camera, please?
Yo.
And there wasn't even like, there was no girl. It was all fake. And I was just like, I'll ask, sir. And then I remember like walking off and then we did like another take and I came back. And I was like, it wasn't successful. She says that you're a bit too much. And he was like, yeah, that makes this, that checks out. Thank you very much.
Oh, bro. Oh, I would have fucked up the whole scene like 3 times. Yo, I'm like, fuck.
Dude, I just absolutely adored him. And Peter Sarsgaard was so open and sweet.
Yeah, but I feel like I've ranted forever, and you're the guest, so sorry about that.
No, it's good. No, this is a real podcast for real. So, you know, we just talking.
Oh man, is there like with your stand up? Is there like? Well, first I would ask, what stand ups do you admire the most, and what is your like? What is your approach when it comes to doing it? Like, what is your ideal sort of, if it were to go perfectly, what would that look like for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, my influences, well, not influences, people I like influences, I mean, you go to like, you know, Dave Chappelle, you got Richard Pryor, you got, you know, Cosby, I know, a lot of things on there. Who else? Let me put it out there. I don't know where it's going to be broadcasted, but let me just, as a person, I know what's happening, but we're talking about comedy.
But dude, yeah, I think that actually, I mean, you know, Cosby's horrible behavior off stage aside, it's the storytelling, like Chappelle and him. Pryor as well, also being honest with, like, you know, catching himself on fire and stuff. Like, there's such, that's my favorite as well. Like, this story is your thing. Like, do you prefer like telling honest stories with jokes laced within, or how do you approach it?
Yeah, that's a good question, man. Like, I mean, there's some stories that I do talk about that have stories laced in, like literally based on like the things I've gone through here in Europe. And that's something, you know, I do it on social media, but like in stand-up is like a different way. And then also too, man, it's just sometimes I just have thoughts. Like I just be having thoughts of like different angles. So like sometimes my approach is I'll be sitting down. I'll just be like, yo, that's funny. Like a thought will come to mind and I'll just expand upon it. Or it'll be something where it just be like, huh. So I'll look at like the differences of something or like the irony of something, like, you know, I don't know. Like, for example, how with like German culture, it might be one way, but then I look at it as different. Or, I would say my experiences as well. So like literally, if I experience something, like my experiences can be small. Like literally, I think I made a video about like the how you call it, the by not bio, organic sugar. Like having organic sugar in a random coffee spot. Like for me, that was like, yo, what? Like y'all say that? So. My things don't have to be big. It just has to be like, yo, so y'all don't use salt. Y'all put rocks on it. And then like, I will have like a whole thing that expounds upon, yo, rocks and salt, but then the environment, but then this and that. But yo, y'all, but what about the rocks? Like how y'all build it? Like my brain can go far. Like,
that's awesome.
So yeah, my process is literally just letting my brain go as far as it can and not putting any limiters on it. Cause it just does it. Like I'm going to look at, you know, I see an old lady walking on a street that hasn't been de-iced. I'm like, yo, so Berlin doesn't give a fuck about the old people at all, yo. I wonder how the, and then my brain just goes.
That's awesome. Do you write your material down or do you just run it on stage and then have it memorized?
I do both. Like, there's some that I definitely, like, writing definitely, like, realizes it. Like, so again, like, just imagine my thoughts are going all over the place. So sometimes, like, I literally got to write it down just to organize it. But In a lot of cases, it's just like I'll have this thought on stage and I'm like, huh. And then I just like say it. So I might have something written. And I'm just like, huh, this person wears some interesting shoes. Yo, shoes. And then my brain go ADHD, I would say, on stage. Not in real life as much.
What was your most recent like humbling experience on stage? Like where you know, I guess the most popular term people would probably understand is like bombing, but like what would be like a humbling experience you had maybe in the last, you know, few months? What was it like?
Last few months. Okay. I think the last few months, this is actually when I was on tour. I was out in Munich or something.
Oh, that's right. You were on tour. Oh my God. Sorry.
Yeah,
okay. The thing is, I want to talk about that. So we can talk about a humbling experience another time. How was the tour and what city was the best city?
Oh, bro, the tour, bro. First of all, just going to all those cities and countries I've never been to and interacting with those places in the form of comedy was like crazy, and learning a lot and just like being out and traveling to that many places in a short period of time.
It's the
was
best,
like,
right? It's the best. Oh, I love it so
best.
Much.
The best, bro. And I would say also traveling to that many places, there's some stereotypes I've heard about some of these cities that like when I went there, like my interaction was different. So it almost like, I don't know, it's like stereotypes are being broken as I travel to these places. Cause some people are like, oh man, if you go to Helsinki, if you go to Finland, Man, they just cold. They just don't really like. And bro, when I that was one of the best shows, bro, in Finland.
Wow.
Bro,
That's
Finland,
so
that's
cool.
it was on fire, bro. Like, I mean, this girl, I'm where she was like, I was talking about saunas, and she had like a story about a sauna stage a little bit. She was like, really talking about it. Everyone in the room was like from Finland. So, you know, some of the shows that I've been doing is like literally everyone's from that city. So that also has been interesting to be like, you
Yeah.
know, because I speak English, American-ish immigrant, so you expect the Americans, but sometimes it's like the whole room is like from that city. And
Yeah, dude.
then
Yeah.
they're actually like laughing out loud. So I'm just like, all right, so yo, Finnish people, they, yo, maybe I came across the right ones, but bro, that was a fun show, bro. Estonia was one. So Estonia, that was
I've
like,
never been there.
bro, Estonia? Yeah, bro, Estonia was fun. That was, I mean, Estonia, you know, granted, shout out to Sander, but he, that was the guy who flew me out to Estonia. He flew me out the first time, and I went to Estonia. So I know how to, I have performed in front of people that only speak Estonian or like they, that's their primary language. So maybe that's a something. But I would say, yeah, Finland was one, Estonia, some German cities like Cologne. What's another one? I mean, those are cities that come to mind, bro. Like Vienna was fun.
Yeah,
Yeah.
dude. Yeah. I enjoyed Vienna as well. It's a re that it's such cool people and such a beautiful city. Like, dude, living in Germany, like for those who don't know, Germans and Austrians have sort of like a friendly rivalry, particularly in Bavaria. Like they talk down about each other a lot, even though they go to each other also a lot. But going to Vienna is just such a wonderful man. Like I relate to you so much. Like I wasn't sure what to expect, but that it's mostly people from there, and they're so cool and open and young and progressive, and they laugh and they enjoy and they're engaged and locked in. And it was just yeah, it was a really yeah, that's a really cool city.
Very cool. Yeah, very, very cool. You know, and then yeah, and, you know, audiences too, just like seeing, because you know, obviously you're gonna come across some cities that are gonna be a little more stiffer or just, you know, outright just like, hey, I ain't do good in that city, right?
Totally.
So also I think visiting cities multiple times. So Vienna, I visited multiple times to where like, all right, there's like maybe one or two shows where, you know, like the crowd was kind of, this is actually an interesting point, right? Because how people enjoy comedy or just like live entertainment is different than that in America, in that if they enjoy or to find something funny, they may not outwardly laugh or they might actually restrict their laughter.
Right.
So you'll be doing a show and you kind of get like some tepid laughs here and there, or just outright just people like nodding, looking at you. And then after that, they'll come up to you, but oh man, I really love the show, man. That's a great show. Like, hey, when can I get in? When next time you're coming back, do you have an email list? Can I add you on Instagram? I like that one joke. You're like, hold on.
You liked
So, yeah,
it?
it's like, bro, your face didn't move the whole time, but you're acting more interested about my comedy than someone that does laugh. That's crazy.
That's such a good point. Yeah, there I've experienced that too, even with like playing music, but also with comedy, exactly the same way as you described it. There will be moments where someone's yeah, just nodding along. And you think, oh, well, maybe they don't love it, but they're not displeased enough to like leave. They're going like, all right, this is okay. Oh, yeah, okay. All right, I'll finish this. And then they come up and they're like, can you sign my blah blah blah? And you're like,
Can I get a selfie? You'd like, hold
yeah,
on.
dude, yeah, it's crazy. That's
And
so
bro,
crazy.
and
Yeah.
then there was smile in the selfie. I'm like, where was the smile when you was in the audience? So you have a great smile, actually. I would have loved to see that when I was actually live and performing.
Yeah, dude. I also found out like on stage there's certain topics that like I talk a lot about my insecurities or my past or personal stories, and I'll talk about being like a really big kid. And I remember I was on the first I think the first tour, maybe this I don't know maybe the la maybe on all of those shows I think that I had to change the language of the setup because I realized if I say fat kid, that they like it's kind of sweet in a way, but they started to have like too much sympathy, where they would be like, oh, that's really a shame that he was an overweight child, and
Yeah, that's yeah.
so I changed it to I had to literally change every time I mentioned like this being a big kid for whatever setup I was doing for a joke into chubby, bigger, you know, whatever. And so that way it would just kind of breeze past them. And then they, every single city laughed more. If I said like, oh, like, you know, I did this and it was chubby and blah, blah, blah. And then they rolled with it. But when I said in the first round, fat, they would, it would die. And you, it was like, what? Whoa.
Yeah. And you bring up a good point too about like semantics and words and how they affect people and like affect people differently per region. So that's like another thing where you're like, all right. So literally, bro, I would assume if you said fat and you was in like an Eastern European country, that would probably done great. Like, I got jokes where I talk about getting punched in the face and that was the best thing in my life as a young kid. And bro, Eastern Europe, hilarious. Here really? In Germany, oh my God, call Child Protective Services and a therapist. Yeah, we need to go back to his inner child and save him.
Absolutely, dude. I'm so glad that we could connect on that. That's so real, dude. It's like, that's such a big part of the job is like literally rephrasing things that you, when you write them or you play with them or you get a flow or, you know, you get like into this like flow state or whatever, like with the joke or the story. And then you realize as you perform it for more and more people, these just replacing a word sometimes changes everything. It's really crazy. Mm-hmm. It's really
very crazy, bro. I would say that's something that has been humbling in general because, well, for one, that, you know, also forces you to be more specific because, you know, at least in New York City or any places you perform in the States, you can kind of go off on like people understand the context in which it's, you know, because you're from America, you know, they're from America. So everyone gets the context to some extent, whereas here the context is not even there. So you have to be very clear of what you're right. saying down to the words and the semantics. So like that actually has forced me to be more explicit with what I'm saying and then also be more clearer. So I can't just rant like I gotta like clear, you know, paste. It follows in a way that they can understand. So I actually have to understand where I'm at to even be able to really say the joke that I want to say or add context or the premise or even the setup of it.
Exactly. It's the combination of like finding the best word for the joke split with finding the best language for a non-native audience. And it's a challenge, but it's also like, it's cool. It's like flexing a muscle. It's like a training tool, which I think can apply to doing stand-up probably anywhere, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, now I'm good. Like now, cause I'm going to be going on tour soon. And when I'm in different cities that's something, you know, I or something, or I went to a Latvia. But all right, bro, like, hold on. Why am I going to go to Spain? I'm going to go to like one of these nicer countries. Let's go.
Yeah, dude, that's absolutely excellent. I could talk to you for like 8 more hours. This has been so insanely fun, but I have to let you go. Do you want to, first off, thank you so much for so much time.
Thank you for having me, bro. Thank you for having me on, bro. It's been, you know, now we meet together in real, not real life, but technically, you know.
I mean, at least more than just DMs, you know. I wish we lived in the same city, man. We would hang out all the time. But if I'm ever in Berlin, I'm going to hit you up, and please do the same if you're in Munich.
Yeah, absolutely, bro.
I'm going to put your Instagram link and your Eventbrite link. And I think I put like 3 or 4 of your links in the show notes. Is there anything else?
Bro. Thank you.
Of course. Is there anything else you want to specifically plug before we go?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm on Instagram as you got it. Nyamean, NYAMEAN. And then I have all my tour dates there. So I'm going to, I don't know when it's coming out, but I'll be in Germany. I'll be in Spain and Valencia. I'll be in Italy. I'll be in a lot of different places. So guys, check me out. And yeah, bro, thank you very much for having me, man.
Dude, this was such a crazy pleasure, man. It was so fun to talk to you. Yeah, guys, go check out the show notes. Follow Nia Yennefin. Okay. And thank you so much for listening, brother. I will stay in touch with you. Let's stay in touch, please.
Yeah, definitely, man. Munich is like, what, 6 hours away? Seven?
It's not so bad. Do a little weekend trip or something. I can host you.
Hey, oh, yeah. I hear about the forces out there and, you know, and the, what is it, the food. So, yeah, let's do it, man.
Let's do it. All right, man. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, bro. Peace.
All right.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.